This is the Patty Vasquez Show.
Follow me on Twitter at Patty Vasquez,
CHI. On 720 WGN.
Some people see the revolution. Yeah, we don't have time for the intro music. I'm sorry. We have to go live right now because we have a guest on hold. We have been celebrating in Chicago the 20th anniversary of Office Space. If anyone has been on the Kennedy, you have seen the sign over the expressway that says, if you could stop texting, that'd be great. I don't think there's any other meme that is more used than that. And I still can't believe that I have on hold with us right now. And I'm so grateful that he's staying up late with us. Gary Cole joins us. Hi, Gary. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
We're very well. I want to introduce you to my friend and my guest as well in studio, Elliot Serrano, just in case you're wondering who the other voice is chiming in.
Hi, Elliot. How are you?
Great, Mr. Cole. This is a huge honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, we're and my mom is listening because
she is.
Thank you. It's Abuelita. She is watching all of The Good Wife right now, but we'll get to that later because we're talking about Office Space, which is a show that I read earlier today pretty much ruined a lot of people's ability to work in an office. But that's not really the point. Did you have any idea while you were filming this movie that it would have this kind of impact? What was your sense of it?
Well, we knew we were working on something really good and really funny because of Mike Judge. But I don't think anyone had any idea that the impact that the movie would have, or that it would be, you know, around 20 years from now, people would you know, still be talking about it. I never worked in an office myself, so maybe I kind of missed the connection people had to to that culture. But no, we knew it was good, but we were pretty amazed when the movie kind of broke through and kind of had a life of its own after that.
What I find remarkable and wonderful is that I think the characters people remember the most are you and Stephen Root with the stapler. I really believe that as much as we love Ron Livingston, and of course Jennifer Aniston was in the movie, people identified with your characters the most.
Well, actually, the movie grew out of an animation, actually two short animations that Mike Judge did probably a decade before we shot the movie. And in those animations, the only characters were, in fact, Lumberg and Milton. And that's what he was. That was the beginning of what he had, and then he built the script around that. But the idea he had basically was just Milton, sitting there kind of mumbling to himself, and Lumberg would come in and periodically terrorize him. So those were, those are the two things he had in his head at first. But when I first saw those animations, even though they were animated and kind of stylized cartoons, I recognize both of those people. We've all seen those people. And so he made the other characters in the movie really identifiable as well. And I really think that's why, it still lasts as well as it does.
When you say we've all seen those people, and you mentioned a moment ago that you had never actually worked in an office, do you, and I wonder if this goes back to when you were younger, do you sort of collect people, sort of moments or, ticks that people have, or the sort of sense that you have in the situation?
Well, Lumberg came exactly from this animation. When I saw it, I received the tape before I had my initial audition for it. And when I watched it, it worked so well that I said to myself, I don't believe I can do anything better than that. So I think I'll just do that. And so I went in and basically mimicked it. I'm a halfway decent mimic. And, I think Mike even did the voice for, I know he did the voice for Milton. I'm not sure if he voiced Lumberg in the cut. So I just ripped it off with his permission. And he said, yeah, I like that. No wonder he liked it. He did it before I did it. So
Elliot was mentioning on our ride here, and as I said, there is over the Kennedy Expressway, of course.
I heard that. That's wild. Crazy. Yeah.
Elliot was mentioning on our way, what has been great in watching you throughout your career is you're a chameleon. And I don't know, I don't know whether you're mimicking other people or, whether it's from Brady Bunch or Talladega Nights or, as I mentioned, The Good Wife, Veep, and you aren't locked into any sort of, you know, you're not, you know, typecast in any way ever.
And I've been lucky that way, and I think that came out of Chicago. I spent probably from 1978 through the mid 80s basically doing theater in Chicago, and we did all kinds of different, you know, we did comedy and with drama and everything in between. We did a lot of weird theater, and so I got a chance before I ever started working in front of a camera to do a lot of different kinds of characters. So by the time I had an opportunity to work on some of this stuff, and I've also been very lucky with the material that's come my way, you know, and so, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, just kind of the luck of the draw.
I'm just curious as to what is it, I mean, between your work in drama and your work in comedy, do you find one particularly more challenging than the other?
I never look at them differently. I don't really go about anything differently because I don't, as an actor, I don't consider them. That's to me the difference between comedy and drama is the audience and what they're going through. It's still a character, and it's still, you know, trying to tell the truth of whatever that character is. So whether it's supposed to, you know, make people chuckle or have an impact on people, I don't go about it differently. And that's what I do. That may not be what other people do, but I think that I've kept it simple that way, and it doesn't seem to, because there's never, when someone's trying to be funny, and I've been guilty of that, that's deadly. Because usually if you're trying to be funny and it's not working, there's nothing more not funny than that. And so, you know, I try to stick to the character.
And I don't think people realize that you are from Park Ridge, Illinois, right here. Actually,
I'm a correction. Correction. Oh. I'm from Rolling Meadows.
Really? Everything I've read today. Well, now I'm. Why does it say Park Ridge on so many different pages?
I get because I 30 years ago I said Park Ridge, and I was born in a hospital in Park Ridge, and that's even wrong, I believe.
Lutheran General.
yes, exactly. Okay. And maybe I was, but I never. That's the only time I was in the parameter of Park Ridge.
So. I'm sorry, Mr. Cole, but there goes the rest of the interview. All my questions were pertaining to your growing up in Park Ridge, so we have to stop.
Well, there you go. You know? I don't know a thing about Park Ridge.
I'm teasing. So I had mentioned that when we were on the phone before the show, first of all, that I was going to try to refrain from geeking out, but that's usually not possible for me. I was doing a podcast yesterday. We do a weekly show called The Mincing Rascals, where we tackle the news of the week. And as you might be aware, we have a couple of big stories in Chicago, one of which is the Jussie Smollett case. And Eric Zorn, who writes for the Chicago Tribune, in the podcast said, you know what this reminded me of? There was a movie in the 80s about this guy in the army who he said his wife and daughters were killed by hippies. And I was like, oh my God, Fatal Vision with Gary Cole. And that was even before I knew you were going to be on the show. And I don't know, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was the glasses that made me remember you or what it was, but that was, does that make any sense to you, that sort of correlation that in Eric Zorn's mind, he would remember this this TV movie?
Well, I mean, there was certainly a deception of a crime involved. You're talking about Fatal Vision, which was a Joe Wamba book.
Right.
I'm sorry, not Joe Wamba, McGinnis, that was published in 1982, and then NBC did a miniseries in 1984 with Carl Malden, Eva Marie Saint, and Andy Griffith.
That's right.
Yes, yeah. Right.
And that was early in your career.
Was basically the second thing I ever did. I did on camera. I did a small TV movie a couple years before that. But it was huge for me. I mean, it was, I didn't really believe that I was there. I was, you know, sitting across from these three people who I, you know, grew up on, and there I was sitting around a table reading a script. So it was pretty surreal, but I got a real valuable first experience that actually went very well. And it was a lot of it was due to those three veteran actors and a really good director.
Yeah, I can't even imagine sitting across from Eva Marie Saint, who, you know, people, if you're not familiar with the name, then perhaps you haven't seen the movie On the Waterfront or North by Northwest.
Right. I mean, she was telling stories about James Dean and how he drove too fast. You know, this was, it was like...
Wow.
Oh, that Jimmy Dean, he would drive too fast. I told him to watch out.
Yeah, of course he did. Gary, would you mind if we took a break for commercial and held you on for a few more minutes? I know that it's late in New York, but we'd love to continue chatting with you,
sure,
if you don't mind. I appreciate that. We are talking to Gary Cole, celebrating the 20th anniversary of Office Space, and I'm geeking out. My mom is, of course, at home panting because she is in the third season of The Good Wife. I told her years ago, Elliot, that this was a great series, and now she's catching up. And then she's like, oh, there's more? There's The Good Fight? Yeah, there's The Good Fight.
Oh, yeah, we keep coming. Yeah. She's going to have plenty to go.
Yeah, no kidding. We've got to talk about that, too. More in a moment. You know what? You can text us or call us 312-981-7200. Join us anytime because this is your conversation. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN.
I'm going to need you to go ahead and come in tomorrow. So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay? Oh, and I almost forgot. I'm also going to need you to go ahead and come in on Sunday, too. Okay? We lost some people this week, and we need to sort of play catch-up. Thanks.
Here's the thing. Not only is it funny, Gary Cole, I think there are people who are having a little PTSD on that as well, who have real experiences with their bosses. We are live with Gary Cole. This is Patty Vasquez. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Elliot Serrano joins us celebrating the 20th anniversary of Office Space. And you know, you mentioned that you had never worked in an office. I worked very briefly in a cubicle. My friends tell me that I am unhirable. And I'm not saying it's because of this movie. But there are people who don't do well in an office. I think that...
Well, I can see why. I mean, yeah. I mean, if Lumberg is lurking around, or anyone Lumberg-like, that what you played there, that's probably Lumberg's creepiest moment in the movie, I would say.
I'm just curious. I mean, I'm sure you get this one all the time, but, you know, 20 years later, I'm sure, you know, you have people reading the lines to you. You hear the quotes all the time. You know, you're talking about it. But I've just got to know, what does it feel like being a meme? Because, I mean, they didn't have memes 20 years ago. And now you're...
Well, right. And I'm still a social media dinosaur. You know, I had to go kicking and screaming just to get email. So when I saw that, it just kind of like the circuits in my brain just kind of misfired as I looked at it. It didn't really quite compute. I take a look at it every once in a while, and now they're, I mean, it's for everything. It just kind of keeps rolling with the time. So.
Well, the thing is, they're kind of endless. There isn't just a meme.
Right. No, they're just whatever current affair pops up, there's Lumberg with his giant aviators and his suspenders, you know, commenting on the, you know, the politics of the day or whatever.
So I will be honest with our listeners. I had to jump back on the phone. I don't always jump back on the phone with our guests, but, you know, you put Gary Cole on the line, you're like, I'm gonna talk to him for a minute. And one of our listeners asks on one of our texts the exact same question I asked, which is, do you ever get a chance to visit Chicago? And you're actually here quite often now. Tell us why.
I was last year. Yeah, I've been doing a recurring role on Chicago Fire. So last year I was in town quite a bit. I did, I think, 9 of the shows last year. And then this year, I didn't come until January because I was still finishing up Veep on HBO, which has finally shot its last episode. So I was there. I was also there for the Polar Vortex, by the way.
Oh, well, that's...
Lucky me.
Did you boil some water and throw it in the air to turn it into snow, or was that not done on the set?
No, I didn't see that one. Yeah, no, I heard, I did, like, yeah, people, like, wet their hair and it froze standing up and stuff like that. No, I stayed inside the whole time.
And that's smart. They also ask, this is from the 630, by the way, they want to know if you still have a chance to do theater.
I was going to do a play last March, at Steppenwolf, but I wound up having to bail out of it because our schedule for Veep changed. We had to pause for a year because Julia Louis-Dreyfus had a breast cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And so we stopped production. And so my schedule changed, so I was unable to do that. So, but I hopefully will, you know, I'd love to do something again. The last play I did at Steppenwolf was not at Chicago. I was on tour with the Tracy Letts play August Osage County.
All right.
But I haven't done a show in Chicago, I believe, and boy, it's been since 2000, I think.
Well, we're gonna need that to happen. That'd be great.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and that'd be great if you could just come back and do a play.
We'd appreciate it.
Thanks.
There's so many things I want to talk to you about, but for my mom, I have to talk about The Good Wife, and the extraordinary chemistry that you have with Christine Baranski is just delicious, is the only way I can explain it.
She's superb. I did the first season of The Good Wife. I think the first year I did two shows. And then it basically was two or three shows a year for the entire run of the Good Wife. Mm-hmm. There was a few years I did more than that. And then, you know, when the show was over, I thought it was ending, and so did she. Although they were cooking up this sequel, she knew something about it. I knew nothing about it. So, you know, I thought I was saying goodbye to everybody, and then the next year I was back on the same stage in the same situation, and I said, okay, well, let's do more of this. But she's just remarkable. I love working with her, and it's, you know, it's the longest, in terms of time spent, for me, it's the longest show I've been on. Not necessarily the amount of episodes, but it's almost going on 10 years now that I've been playing that character.
And I have to imagine that the next season that'll be coming out, because it was involving you and Christine Baranski's character so much as far as national politics and the stories in the news. I have to say this, my mother is a lifelong liberal. I think you have her wanting to go to the shooting range. I'm just saying, not for nothing.
Well, you can have that effect, yes.
Gary, it has been a pleasure, and as I mentioned, we've been talking to Gary Cole, and I, off the air, invited him in studio. If you ever have a chance, and if you would indulge us again, we'd love to have a conversation anytime your schedule allows. It has been delightful to speak with you.
Same here. I'll take you up on it.
All right. I appreciate it. Have a great evening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you so much, and congratulations on such a wonderful career, and we look forward to more.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Okay, so that happened. More in a moment on 720 WGN. I've got to get a break. Now I'm late. I'm in trouble.
Gotta get up, gotta get out, gotta get home before the morning comes. What if I'm late? Got a big day, gotta get home before the sun comes up. Up and away, got a big day.
Anyone who has seen the series Russian Doll is now going, oh my God, am I standing in front of a mirror? Did I just get hit by a car? Did I fall down a flight of stairs? Did I fall into one of those garbage things in New York? The series Russian Doll is captivating. It's perplexing. It is sometimes traumatizing. Maybe you're afraid to cross the street or walk down a flight of stairs. Tom Hush is behind the producer's glass, nodding yes emphatically.
Yes, I think honestly, we're talking top 10 Netflix originals thus far. It's up there.
It's remarkable. And by the way, Elliot Serrano in studio said, "Oh, that's right. That's what you assigned for Binge and Uncork, a segment that you co-created with winemaker Susan Dannenberger." Susan, tell Elliot how seriously disappointed you are right now that he forgot.
No, I did. It's so good, Elliot. You would have loved it.
Okay, it's not that I forgot. It's not that I forgot.
You said, okay, that's right.
That's right. No, I said I tried to watch it, but the girlfriend refused to watch it with me. Mm-hmm. She's like, no,
why?
No, it's going to be traumatic. It's like this. I can't watch that. I'm like, but no, I hear it's really good. I hear it's really, really good. Come on, let's just watch one episode. No, I can't.
Okay, stop pretending. Stop mocking her voice. Okay. I need you to stop right there.
Okay, sorry.
But, trying to protect you for later.
I know. No, I'm already in trouble. I told her I was throwing her under the bus for this one. So
You just and then you backed the bus up.
And I backed it over. Yep.
What's happening? All right, Susan, our wonderful winemaker in front of the show from Dannenberger Family Vineyards in New Berlin, Illinois. What did you think of the series Russian Doll on Netflix?
It was dark but hysterical. I wasn't sure what, you know, I had no idea how it was going to go, and I couldn't stop watching it. I ended up staying up all night long. I couldn't stop. And I just wanted to know what's going to happen, what's going to happen.
And that messes with your head a little bit, because I did the same thing, and I had to go back and watch. One of our friends on the show, John Tatey, mentioned that he started taking notes because he realized how complicated it would be. Now, I'm not going to watch something and take notes, but I will go back and go, okay, now I get that a little bit. It's a wonderful story. I mean, and you know, it's co-created by not only the star of the series, Natasha Lyonne, right? That's her name, and Amy Poehler. Mm-hmm. So you can see where there's the comedy and the darkness, don't you think?
Yeah,
yeah.
And so many subtleties that you don't catch, and I guess why he would take notes, because it, you know, shows how just a smidgen of a moment with a person can change your whole life.
Right.
And then you have to kind of go back and try to see, you know, how to improve it or make it even better. It was really cool. It made you think a lot. I was like, yeah, maybe I'm, you know, should rethink how I live every day.
Tom, are you having the same sensation having watched the whole thing?
Yeah, I actually finished my second watch through today.
Yeah,
because I will say for anybody listening, this is a very short series. It's 8 episodes of like 25 minutes
right
each, so you can watch yeah. it pretty quickly in the span of a couple days. It's a really great binge watch, and especially because it helps you remember like certain little details, you know, maybe you don't really need to take notes, because if you watch it pretty much continuously, you'll get everything fairly close, like you'll pretty much get it. But I just love the way that this show handles the question of this modern dread of human connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's really the core of what we're trying to get at. There's a lot of stuff about trauma and things like that that are cooked into it, that are part of the characters. But really, I think the point of the show is to talk about our 2019 fear of human connection. And frankly, I think everybody, no matter who you are, on some level has an issue with human connection, and this makes a case for it, and how it enriches a life, and how it gives a life its meaning, even in the face of an uncaring, unfeeling universe.
And in those Ooh. Moments, those choices that you make, what you're supposed to do, right? And we don't think of it that way. We have choice. That's kind of the whole idea, you know, behind, in particular, some religions where, you know, some religions believe that everything is preordained, that everything that happens is supposed to happen. Whereas there are other religions, like deists or whatever religion you're a part of, believe that your choice is also a manifestation of a greater power, that you're expressing whatever's supposed to happen in the universe, and you have that choice. But what are you supposed to do? Yeah. What can you do? What should you do?
This totally plays with both, because the two main characters, Nadia and Alan, are coming from opposing sides. Nadia is, I guess, what you would call a bit of a misanthrope. She is, as far as we can tell, atheist or agnostic. She's kind of nihilistic. It kind of lives for herself, wants her own ends. Meanwhile,
She's a cockroach.
She can't kill her. and then Alan comes in, and he's got this perspective of something more, I guess, Judeo-Christian. He believes he's in purgatory. He believes that he is being punished for some sort of moral failing, and that's where a lot of their initial tension comes from, as they try to discover what's happening to them, trying to figure out whether this is a result of just cruel irony or a higher power trying to send a message. And I think both of them kind of meet in the middle in some point and realize that they're both kind of correct, depending on their relativity is a big theme in this, and based on their relative experiences, they come to their own conclusions.
It's the Forrest Gump ending.
Yeah. Except I liked this ending.
Yeah. I think I like this ending as well. So I have to ask, Susan, what wine did you pair with Russian Doll?
So are you trying it right now? Did you get it?
I have to wait until after the show. We've been asked to, especially because it's not that I've spilled wine in the studio. What I'm going to do, because I have been rewatching. I'm only halfway through the second viewing of it. I'm waiting to watch it with the wine that you've paired with it.
Oh, good choice. So yes. I paired my new 2016 Carmen. I thought it was a good choice. Besides the fact that it's like deep and red and it's got subtleties and dimension, I also thought it's always the one that I'm every year doing over and over to see if I can improve it each time. What can I change to the next year to like make it my best ever? So it kind of felt like it paralleled with the show to me.
And your Carmens are always so wonderful. They're textured and there's this, I don't know, it's just delightful to try those. So I'm excited to see what the 2016 is like.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what you think of it with the show, because I really do. You know, that's what she was doing every time, reliving her life, is trying to find, you know, the right thing, the right twist, you know, to improve on her life, to kind of make it better. I mean, that wasn't her intention, of course. That's what she was being forced to do. But each time she was trying to improve. And I thought, oh, yeah, that's what we're all trying to do. If we could all go back and try to just redo things and make them better.
See, yeah. I don't know if I would want to. I don't know if I would want. Would you want to? Is there anything can you think off the top of your head you would want to go back and do better?
I don't think I would. I think you get to the point where you're at and you're like, well, I got here for this reason. So I like what I am. So I don't think I would want to do it over, but maybe just think about things more consciously and try to make them better.
I agree. What about you, Tom? Would you want to redo something?
High school.
Oh, see, my fear about that is that it was what it was. And if I try to do something differently with the ability of hindsight, right, consciously knowing how things went, like I'm worried that I would just make things worse. Like whatever choices I made, like exponentially, I would have an even more negative impact, not only on my life, but the lives of those around me.
Mm.
I mean, it's kind of a little bit what she does in Russian Doll, trying to figure things out.
There's a little bit of a butterfly effect thing going on. As she tries to change things, they don't. She thinks it's going to play out the same way, but as you see across the series, it has.
Something else changes.
Yeah, something else changes, and it's not quite the way it was before.
The fish! What happened to the fish? I'm just saying. All right.
See, I wish I was able to watch this show.
Elliot's very, very confused.
Really upset right now.
Well, Elliot, what have you... we need a recommendation before we leave with Susan. By the way, Dannenberger Family Vineyards. You can go to DannenbergerFamilyVineyards.com for more information. And follow her at DFV Wines on Instagram. And find out about the great performances and live entertainment she has at her venue. Elliot, have you been watching something that we should watch?
No, actually, yeah, because again, whenever I try to watch something on Netflix, I keep getting vetoed on it. So
you don't watch it?
What? Well, okay, what does she want to watch?
Yeah, what does she want to watch?
It's been all about the holiday movies.
Still? We're still watching the holiday movies on Hallmark?
Yeah, and even the holiday movies on Netflix.
I can't.
You know, that's just been the thing.
From Christmas?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my.
Mm. Has sex education been proposed?
Okay, so I was going to recommend this a while ago. It is aggressively sexual.
But it's so good.
It is.
Oh, well, cool.
Okay. All right. There it is. I am telling the audience right now ahead of time that it is like right out of the gate. It's all in. Just so you know, it stars, gosh, I'm blanking on her name from X-Files.
Gillian
right now.
Anderson.
Thank you very much. Gillian Anderson.
Asa Butterfield from Ender's Game, if anybody remembers that
attempt
at a film.
Great book, horrible movie. But yeah.
So you watch it with your own approval. If you know, this is not, I mean, we are saying that's what we're going to watch and what we're going to talk about. And we would love to have you join the conversation. However, you know, you take responsibility for how you react to it. There's a lot of sex, so it's called sex education, so it's kind of built into the name. So there you go, Susan. That's, we'll figure out. We'll have the dump button ready for the next time for episode. We might have to do this in 2 weeks, just because I think it'd be better to give people a little time to go watch the first episode. So we'll do this in 2 weeks. Tom, are you? Do you know if you're back in 2 weeks? We'll figure it out.
I'll make sure I'm back.
All right, I think
I got a lot
Tom.
Of thoughts on that show.
All right, yeah. All right. So and that's the other thing is that Tom.
I can't wait to hear what the musical cues will be.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. So we'll wait for we'll wait till Tom can be back because he's off next Friday night. Susan Dannenberger joined us for Binge and Uncork. We want to thank you so much again. The wine was the Carmen 2016. Thank you so much, Susan, for joining us tonight. And
all right, you guys have a good night.
Follow her on Instagram. She's got some incredible and inspirational posting going up all the time. Susan, thank you. I love the boots, by the way. Love the boots.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, those are They're badass. Awesome. They're badass. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
All right. Good night, you guys.
Good night. More in a moment on 720 WGN. All right. I think we're heading into the home stretch for the mayoral election, and that's the one everyone's paying attention to. I think you're aware in the city of Chicago there are a couple other items on the ballot. You got your city treasurer, your city clerk, and your alderman. Every single alderman is up for either re-election or perhaps some seats are being filled because the alderman not running again. But in the 45th ward, incumbent John Arena is running again, and another heated battle for you in a neighborhood, in a couple of neighborhoods that are incredible. There's been so much of a boom when it comes to businesses coming in, some great things that I had never seen on the northwest side of Chicago when it came to art, coffee shops. Mm-hmm. There were those things. What has this campaign season been like for you, John?
You know, everyone is unique. That's what I've learned after going into my third campaign. Everyone has its own personality, some similarities. I mean, I'm running against a first responder, mm-hmm. which I've run against twice before. Three challengers, one female, one, and three guys.
It's a pretty big. It's a bigger field than usual, I think.
It was the same. Last time it was the same, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
One woman and three guys. And the biggest field was when I first ran in 2011. There were seven of us on the ballot. That was when Pat LeVar decided not to run after Daley announced he was stepping down.
Right.
And then it was seven, a field of seven. And then it came down to two in a runoff, and I won by 30 votes, so...
Are you expecting a runoff this time?
You know, I feel good about our numbers, mm-hmm. our campaign, and what we've done. It's 50-50. We need folks to turn out. That's going to determine it.
That's what everyone needs, is for the voters to show up. And I think that people, I hope... understand how important this election is. February 26th, that's Tuesday. You can early vote right now in your district, and I recommend that you do that. The lines are going to be short because it's moving so quickly.
Yeah. It's a short ballot. In November, there was judges, there was, all kinds of, all different levels of government. This is a pretty direct ballot, and early voting's open tomorrow, Sunday, mm-hmm. and Monday, and at your polling place on Tuesday.
What are the constituents in your neighborhoods, which include Jefferson Park, Portage Park, Irving,
Old Irving, Independence Park, mm-hmm. Gladstone Park, and Union Ridge.
What are the folks telling you when you go door to door or when you're having these conversations? I know that you're having some town hall meetings and you've had a couple of debates. What are the things that you're hearing the most about what people want, what they like, those kinds of things?
They want to see the development continue. Mm-hmm. I mean, the biggest questions are about, where are we now and what's in the mix, what's already approved, what's mm-hmm. coming, and that's the challenge. Is these things take time, and
right.
Once we get done on the government side working with a private developer, and you turn over the keys and they got to get in the ground and start building stuff, that can be a year before they start working on stuff because of the design process, the architecture process, the permitting process. Mm-hmm. So, we're in a good place because a lot of the stuff that we have to do is big projects that, for years we've wanted to see something built on these empty lots, or see one of the corners and six corners get moving. But they're big ticket items, so it's not just opening up a restaurant one off. It's a big project with a lot of moving parts to it. So it's tough to get people to kind of see that what we approved last year through in a community meeting mm-hmm. is going to get started in the spring of 2019, and you're talking 12, 14 months before you're seeing that work. So that's, I think, is what is kind of reminding folks that all this stuff we've been talking about for a long time is going to come, but you know, and it's a neighborhood that's waited a long time for this. So I get the anticipation.
It is, you know, the big battle right now when people are talking about the mayor's race is how much has been invested in downtown and how does that play out for the neighborhoods. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. We're hanging out with Alderman John Arena, who is running for re-election of the 45th Ward. You can join our conversation anytime if you have any questions or comments. We're not, you know. We're not hiding. 312-981-7200. If you want to join us, please do. It's your conversation. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Tuesday is election day in Chicago. It is our opportunity to choose a new mayor, a new city clerk, a new treasurer. And for the 50 wards in Chicago, we are electing aldermen. Some of them are incumbents. In studio, we have alderman for the 45th Ward, John Arena. I always say your name wrong because I like to put in a Spanish accent. When you see his name, don't you want to say Arena, Elliot? Arena, not Arena.
It's well, yeah, because you want a rain, you know, to... not to rule, but you want to reign as someone.
As the alderman.
But if you say arena, that kind of like implies combat, which... Same goes for alderman
in Chicago.
Yeah.
We were talking off the air a little bit about the mayor's race, and of course it's crucial, but I always find that the aldermen are the ones that can help you get things done. What do you think about Bill Daley's proposition that we cut the aldermen's offices down to, like, what, 15?
15, yeah. Well, so I represent 56,000 people right now. It's about 800 residential blocks. So in order to get, if you cut down to 15, you got to divide the city up. 2.6 million people by 15 is like 250,000 people. That would be twice as much as a state rep. So you're not going to be able to come and have ward night with the alderman. You're not going to be able to. We would be legislators. We would have a lot more power in our vote, but we're not going to be service providers.
That's the thing. And the problem I have with that, too, is because of the way the city is divided up, often in racial ways. Right. So how do you account for, you know, wards that are already suffering and now you lump them in with perhaps I don't see how it benefits areas that are already trying to fight for a piece of the pie and keep getting that pie having smaller slices every single time they show up. That would be hard. And, you know, the idea that you are there, you have office hours. Yeah. How are you going to serve people if they have worries about potholes or, you know, trees that are affecting their electrical lines?
Yeah, I mean, people put, you know, then you're looking at a bureaucracy to take care of everything, and you've got to, you know, what we do now is we don't put every, you know, 311 call in or every pothole in. We want residents to help us out with that. But when things get stuck in the system, how do you find a live body at the other end of the line?
They want a face, John.
They want a face, right? So, you know, I have three full-time staff, one part-time staff, and as many interns as we can pack into the office, you know, over summer and over holidays. But we get 750 calls a week, you know, legitimate service calls a week. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to multiply that. I think this has all been proposed over and over again, cut us to 25, cut us to 15, as this somehow it's going to save us all this money. Well, it's going to move the lowest level of government farther away from people. And if we're okay with that, then okay. But it's also not going to save money because you got to have staff to follow up with things and make sure things are getting done. So at some point, you've got to spend some money to fill in the gap. What's interesting is in 2012, when we did the last redistricting, the Progressive Caucus put together a 35-ward map, which would put us at about 70,000 people to represent. And we thought that was something that we could actually manage, still provide the level of service that people expect without increasing staff. Maybe you would add one more staffer to cover the additional population. But we thought that was manageable. But the other part of that is you don't want aldermen making the maps, because if you look at the map of Chicago wards, it's like spaghetti on a wall.
Right.
What we need to do is make the map more coherent and easier to grid and easier to get things done. And that's not the way it is now. So there's a couple of reforms that have to come behind that, not just throwing out a number and saying this solves all our problems.
And there is an urgency when people come in. They want to talk to you. They want to see your face. They have a lot of issues. And you're also accessible on social media. You come under attack for a lot of different things, as every politician does. In your ward, you have a lot of first responders, a lot of city workers, folks who want to keep things the way they are. I would say you have, in some ways, in pockets, you have a fairly conservative ward. And folks who don't want to see much change, a lot of them have been there for generations. And when you have new construction coming in, or the possibility of something that's called mixed income housing or affordable housing, you get a lot of resistance. And we had in the studio with us, we had an author who had written High Risers, The Future of Affordable Housing. And everybody wants things to be better, but they don't want to be a part of the solution. Well, how do you have those conversations with your constituents?
More are easier than hard. I think there's some folks that are pretty entrenched in their thinking, and we saw that with 5150 and a few other things. But you know, I think most people, if you get past the assumptions about certain things and talk about some facts and figures and literally talk to them and find out, well, what is the real underlying concern? Is it traffic? Is it, you know, is it density? You know, these things can be addressed. Mm-hmm. And so the biggest challenge is, you know, people want to have their say, and I appreciate that, but we have to get beyond just no. We have to get to, you know, let's talk about solutions to the underlying problems. Because if you tell me you want a Starbucks at the end of your street, or you want restaurants that you can walk to, or you want retail, but you don't want to change any of the dynamics that have existed in the ward for the 20 years before I came into office, then I can't promise you you'll get a restaurant that'll survive, or a Starbucks at the end of the street. So you have to have a conversation about changing something of the metrics. And density is an issue, and especially near transit. And we have one of the biggest transit hubs, as you know, in Jeff Park, with vacant land around it. So really it's just kind of, you know, getting past that initial no to some place that says, okay, we agree we want to get something done. Well, now let's just talk about how that happens. And we can do that. And you know, we've done it on a lot of different things. But there's definitely always some people that are just like, you know what, I'm good with the way things are. I don't care what my neighbor wants. And, you know, if I get that, but I can't, that's a minority that I've talked to. Mm-hmm. The majority want to see something move. Scale is important. Location is important. All these things have to play into it. But I think the majority of the ward, they've elected me twice, have said, we want to see some measured progress, and we're starting to see that now.
Having served the ward, the 45th ward, again, for those just joining us, that includes Jefferson Park, as you mentioned, which is the Blue Line hub, right across the street from the Gale Street Inn. We love George Carr's. and a lot, and Weston's now, and of course, you got your Dunkin' Donuts over there, and some great things by that plaza. A lot of folks in that ward are, you know, they're wondering about some of the changes, and they're also wondering, say you win this election, how long do you see yourself serving as an alderman? Is this what you, I mean, people worry about lifetime public servants who maybe are there too long. Do you see yourself much, I mean, what do you want to do next if this is perhaps something moving on to another level?
Sure. That's, I mean, for me, that's a tough question to answer because I've had a very...
Yeah, get through this election first.
Yeah, I got to get through this one. You know, it's a four-year term, and so I think of it in those chunks that I get the honor of serving, and then the voters will tell me if they want me to continue. You know, this is tough on my family. You know, it's a lot of time and effort that's away from, you know, the normal run of a family. Mm-hmm. So,
and they're,
you know,
under the spotlight too.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you're very
and
public.
That's politics, you know, everywhere. But you know, they're also as committed to me as seeing improvements and seeing our city, you know, come through some of the challenges it has. So you know, they're as vested as I am. So you know, I look at, like, if I'm not elected this time, or if I'm elected and not elected next time, you know, I'll be okay. Something will present itself. Opportunities are there for somebody in my position. What I'm most worried about is you know, where are we creating opportunities for others who haven't seen them in this city? And that, you know, small business owners that have opened in the ward, like, you know, Gus and Shauna at Fishman's, they're just salt of the earth people from the Northwest side, and they're everything you want to see be successful. You know, Nick at Weston's, we mentioned him. George is an institution, you know, with Gale Street Inn. And so there's different generations here that we have to look at, how do we how do we set a platform for people to try things and to work and live and play in their own neighborhood. That's, you know, why I'm doing this now. You know, if other opportunities present themselves, I'll consider them when they come. But right now, I'm really enjoying seeing the progress and seeing some of these successes play out in front of us.
We talked about the businesses on the Northwest side. We talked about developing some of the properties and perhaps providing housing to people from different backgrounds. What are some of the other services people are looking for on the Northwest side of Chicago when it comes to perhaps education or, you know, medical help, mental illness issues and things like that?
So, yeah, this is something that as we talk about public safety, as we talk about how our city is, you know, needs to be, you know, there's every neighborhood has to be part of the solution. You know, the Northwest side, our neighborhood, we're incredibly lucky. We have amazing resources. We have very good, overall, a very stable economy, good employment, things like that. You know, our education system is good, getting better. We have great schools. We have capacity issues because so many families are moving to the neighborhood. But we also have, you know, we have immigrants coming to the community now, settling on the West Jefferson Park. We have a increasing Muslim population. We have, you know, they speak Arabic in the home. We have a increasing Hispanic population. So we're starting to see this integration in the community, and we have to make sure that there's opportunities for them to be part of the conversation. So, you know, when we're working on an early education center at St. Cornelius, the former Catholic school that closed a couple years ago, and we're partnering with Lurie Children's Hospital. And one of the things we're seeing is an integration and understanding in our health system that's talking about housing as being part of the solution to some of the health problems we have. So especially in households where English isn't the first language, a parent doesn't get health care because communicating what's going on to a doctor that doesn't speak the language. So Lurie's is partnering and creating education centers and care centers, immediate care centers and doctor care centers, so that the children are learning English and are translating for their parents to get the doctor the right information. And we're seeing, you know, there's a network. We met with Dick Durbin, and there's a 10 major hospitals around the Chicagoland area. And what they're realizing is homelessness, somebody who's homeless comes into an emergency room, and it's $3,000 just to check them in, right?
Wow.
But for $3,000 for one visit, you could house somebody for less than $1,000. So what they're realizing is housing gets to some underlying health care issues,
right,
that are costing us billions of dollars. And so now hospitals are starting to build housing near them and managing housing and making sure that services are available when there's checkups. And it's starting to mesh together and thinking in our society that these things are not isolated problems. You know, poor health can lead to homelessness because the healthcare system's so expensive. So if we provide housing, you can get over that cold that was nagging you and keeping you from being productive. So these are some of the things that are going on and are really exciting to, again, talk about as we talk about how does the city function. And when you talk about downtown and longevity on the city council, you know, yeah, it can be caustic when you're 50 years on the council and you're shaking down Burger King.
And that's that's my question. And obviously, it was kind of built into that original question. Is know, we have in the back of our minds.
These are the things that that we now find out through a federal investigation, and it's sad because it puts a pale on people's trust in their local government. And just like, you know, no two aldermen are the same, no two people are the same. Everybody has their own history. I'm going into my third term, hopefully. I have a ton of institutional knowledge that I've built up on how to lead progressive legislation through the council. And my hope is that as we see this next council get seated, that we're going to see an increase in the progressive caucus. The conversation will be less about how we fix the problems of the past through doing the same things, just slightly differently, but to wholesale change the way we look at governance in this city.
Before we let you go, because I do have to offer equal time, so we only have 2 days left. So if your opponents want to come on, I've got to make sure that I can offer them the same, as we will make that available. What do you want to make sure the constituents of the 45th Ward know about your candidacy?
I think it's, you know, transparency has been a cornerstone that we have to challenge the status quo. I've been an independent voice on the city council for the last 8 years and can continue to do that and lead a progressive caucus that will represent a better politics for Chicago. And, you know, locally, we've got to see some of this stuff through and get to a stable, functioning economy around our hubs like Jefferson Park and Six Corners. And there's no reason why we can't build density housing in one place without threatening the single-family nature of other parts of the ward. These things can coexist. They do in the suburbs, and they can do here in the city, especially on the northwest side.
It's John Arena. He is running for the 45th Ward, and we know that it's a very long haul, and take care of yourself, pace yourself. Everyone, you've got to vote. You can vote early throughout the next few days, and of course, Election Day is on Tuesday, February 26th. So get out there, be informed, and find out what's going on in your community. Thank you so much, Alderman. We appreciate your time.
Me.
Of course. I've got to get a photo before you go. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Poor Mike Lieber and Eric Elk, they're like, aren't we doing Finally Friday? Well, we're getting to it right there. Elliot, are you kind of happy that you don't live in the city of Chicago? You don't have to get involved in our election?
Not right now, no.
I mean, there's a lot going on.
It's funny that there are, 50 aldermanic seats up?
Yep.
Plus the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, 14 candidates right now running for mayor?
I believe that's right. Mike Lieber joined us in studio.
That is correct.
For 14. Friday.
And there is no obvious, you know, front runner. I've talked about this before, after so many people said, Rahm Emanuel's got to go. He's got to, remember after the whole Laquan McDonald thing, he's got to resign. And then, okay, well, he's finally leaving. Who's stepping up? Waiting for someone to step up?
I don't see anybody in the lead. Mike, do you live in the city?
I don't, but I have finally kind of decided on a favorite.
Have you?
I have.
Okay.
Should I say who it is or
not? Well, you're not voting in the election.
I'm not voting.
You can say whatever you want.
I am giving her tomorrow $325,000 for her campaign. I'm kidding. I'm about $324,000 light. I like Lori Lightfoot.
Why? What made you come up? Well, everyone's all Lori Lightfoot this week. Last week it was all one week it was all Gary Chico. One week it was all Bill Daley. One week it was all Preckwinkle. Every week it's somebody new, and this is heading into the final days. So Lori Lightfoot has come in strong this week.
She has, and you know she's been in the news kind of due to some unforced errors by Tony Preckwinkle.
Was it by Preckwinkle or was it by people in her circle?
By people in her circle, and you know I'm not sure that they were the biggest deals, but you know it's gotten her some free media.
Seems like it's been a pretty big deal because lot of people are talking about Preckwinkle. About how she had to fire a staffer. She had a representative who went to the press conference on Monday to it was a press conference about him, about
right.
something he had done. Representative Robert Martwick, who had dropped a bill on Friday about the Cook County Assessor's Office, and she was in a press conference saying, here's another one of Preckwinkle's, you know, allies. And so he decided that he would defend himself and to rather loud results.
Right. And it was, you know, I saw the video and it was kind of uncomfortable video. But in a situation like this where you have, you know, five or six people who are really kind of neck and neck, anywhere between, you know, polling at 9 to 14%, and you just need to be one of the top two, you want to be in the news. And she's been in the news. I mean, I think it's going to be, you know, Chico and Preckwinkle.
Really? All right.
Not Chico. Daley. Daley. I think it's going to be Daley and Preckwinkle.
I got another text. Another one says Lightfoot. All right. I got to find out more. I got to see what everyone's thinking when we come back. We're going to take a break. The news. And man, everyone's about the Lightfoot. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Tuesday is Election Day, February 26th. In Chicago, we are electing our next mayor. 50 wards are, what was that, Eric?
Isn't that a holiday?
It's never a holiday.
I mean, come on. It's Election Day. It's like a holiday.
I'm excited.
It's one of the best days of the year.
I'll be getting up at 4:15 a.m. because I need to do my hair in order to be a judge of elections.
I call lies on that. You won't even sleep.
You're right, because I'll be getting home at 2 in the morning after my show. I'll be a judge of election in my neighborhood, and then I'm coming down to do the results. All the polls will be coming in. And so it'll be an interesting day. And then I'm taking off Wednesday. I'm not really. The Blackhawks are playing, so I don't have a show that night. So it works out just fine. Elliot Serrano joins us in studio. Eric Elk. We have Mike Lieber. We have Ken Dickabowski on the line. Ken and I and Tom Hush behind the glass producing the show tonight and making sure everything goes smoothly. The three of us are the only ones, I believe, that are registered to vote in the city of Chicago. Oh, you are too.
And I am.
So it's just Elliot and Mike.
That's right.
Oh, you guys are outnumbered. Why do I think of you as being in the suburbs, Eric?
Well, because that's where I
grew up.
Hail, and that's hail. Where I...
He all has right. a suburban mentality.
So let me ask our Chicagoans then. I'll start with Ken since he's on the line. And welcome to the show, Ken. How are you doing?
Hey, baseball tomorrow and the mayoral race Tuesday.
Life is good.
What could be better? It's on WGN. So what could be better?
Well, if you follow Roger Badish, you'll see that he's been counting down not only up until pitchers and catchers, but he also was counting down and now until opening day. Is that right, Roger?
That is correct.
And we love seeing that. So go to his Facebook page and you'll be able to see those great images.
Yeah, and the reason why you thought Eric was not a resident of the city of Chicago is because he's a Republican.
I'm not saying anything.
You trying to say my vote won't count here?
Well, it depends who you vote for. If you vote for Bill Daley, it will count bigly. If
bigly.
You vote for somebody else, it will not.
Now, I met Bill Daley the other day in our green room in the PPG Paints green room, and he was right out of casting. He's got the look of if I was doing a movie or a television show and we needed to cast a mayor, I'd be like that guy with the big head in the suit.
That would be. Trim the eyebrows.
I might trim the eyebrows, but yeah.
Did he have the cufflinks?
He definitely had cufflinks. I don't know if he had a pinky ring or not. That might have.
How did he smell? Did he have cologne on? Did he?
I tried not to smell.
Get that
people.
Close? Yeah.
Yeah, I try not to smell people. Ken, as you know, I texted you right away, and I was teasing Bill Daley for doing the Rokan show and yet saying no to our show. And then I said, well, you know, we're carried in 38 states in Canada, to which his press guy said, well, like, they don't vote in Canada for Chicago elections. And I go, well, if you want to stop with Chicago as your goal, then all right, then whatever. Just
well, Bill may actually, as you know, Bill is the person that I have already voted for, proudly. But I Bill's getting a break because it appears that Tony... I authored the soda tax, the most unpopular tax in the history of Chicago. Preckwinkle appears to be slipping.
I was saying earlier, it seems like every week somebody either is pulling ahead or falling behind or has some flubs. Tony Preckwinkle has had some unforced errors, as my husband would say, this week. And starting on Monday, I think it's been more Lori Lightfoot's week to have, because there have been, and do you think that comes from Preckwinkle's campaign feeling threatened in some way by
yes.
Lori Lightfoot? Is that what the whole sort of gist of this?
My guess is Lightfoot probably wouldn't have had that much coverage. You know, she had that press conference. She may have had a story or a little coverage, but the fact that she got engaged on an issue and that became the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone covered it because it was such a heated exchange and almost very personal.
Right. But do you think that then Lori Lightfoot and Preckwinkle kind of going head to head helps any of the other candidates like Mendoza, who, you know, didn't really necessarily jump into the fray or come to anyone's defense or say anything about even the Scott Cizik situation on Preckwinkle's campaign in a post that he made in order to sort of reference a part of Lightfoot's career? Do you think it helps her or Chico or Vallis? Do you think?
If Tony is losing votes, they've got to go somewhere.
Right.
And are they going to go to Lightfoot? Maybe some of them are. But they've got to go somewhere. And I think Susana Mendoza is going to pick some up. I think she's had a strong week. I think a lot of this was kind of put in place by the poll that came out last week, where there were kind of five people who were pretty close, anywhere between 14% and 9%.
Okay.
And it was Tony, and then Daly, and then Susanna, and then Chico, and Lightfoot. Or no, Lightfoot, and then Chico. So they were all like 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So you realize, like, any one of those with a little push could get in the top two. So Susanna, I think, is helped by this too.
Elliot, have you been watching any of the developments?
No, I've been listening to a lot of the debates. Mm-hmm. It just astounds me that, again, no one really kind of like steps up and is the obvious choice, in my opinion. I was listening to one of the debates that the WTTW won, and I was listening. I'm going, I wish I were on that panel. Because I know I can never run for mayor, but I know I'd be able to win that debate. Because it seemed like they didn't want to answer the questions. They kept hemming and hawing, going back and forth, instead of answering a question, going after their opponent for whatever reason. And it was just frustrating listening to them. It's like you're just waiting for someone to step up and say, this is me, I'm your person, and this is why.
Well, that's because the best debate already happened back in December at the Copernicus Center with the moderator from WGN Radio.
Elliot, you know, in if they were going after their opponent, were they opening any new lines of attack, or was it the repeated attack lines you've already heard?
Yeah, it was the stuff that you'd heard.
Because
before,
at this point, right? The only sense in doing that is if you have a whole new line of attack potentially to crack open on an opponent and start a line of thread on that, on an issue, and generate negative stories on someone with a new line. Otherwise, no one's really going to cover it, and it's just a wash, you know. I mean, at that point, you might as well just, you know, talk about how awesome you are.
Well, I am awesome, but...
Right, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot left to be said. I will say this. I'm almost losing sleep because I'm so excited. This, you know, how often do you have an election where we have no idea who's going to finish in the top two? It's
right.
Actually really exciting.
That's why I wanted to be an election judge, just to like even get the energy of what happens in my neighborhood, how people are, you know, and they not that I want to know how they're voting, but I want to see who shows up, how they're feeling about it, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, pro tip, as an election judge, you can't actually
No, I won't ask anybody, I'll tell you this. One of the reasons I want to do this, and I've been wanting to do this for years, I was at for the primary when Rauner was trying to get on the ballot. There was a woman, I waited. They asked me if I wanted the electronic or the paper ballot. And I said, I'll do the electronic ballot. And there was only one at the time in the gymnasium. And there was an elderly woman. I was like, that's fine. You know, I'll wait till she's done. And I remember the whole thing. I went and I sat down on some mats. And I was on my Bluetooth with my husband. I'm like, yeah, I'm waiting to vote. This woman's in front of me. She finishes up. She goes over, hands her card to the election judges. And she turns around. She had a cane. She was in her 80s. Her name was Peggy. I actually ended up talking to her later. And she started walking out of the gymnasium. Long gym. She's walking through the whole thing. And as I'm at the table with these folks, they say, I already finished my ballot. And she was still getting out the door. Yeah. And they said, oh, we have to throw out her ballot. There was a mistake on her ballot. And they were like looking at it. And they're like, oh, we have to throw it out. And I said, well, she's right there. She's still in the gymnasium. And they're like, yeah, well, it's, you know. And they were about to throw out her ballot.
That's crazy.
So I ran after her. Now, by the time I got to her, she had her hand on her door. It was about 5:30, 5:40 in the evening. And I said, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but they're about to throw out your ballot. There was a mistake with whatever you punched. And she goes, and she dropped her shoulders and she sighed. And she goes, if I go back in, I can't stop at the grocery store. I can't drive after dark.
Yeah.
I said I don't have to tell you, but they're going to throw out your ballot. And she goes, okay. She came and she turned around. She walked back in, and she went and finished her ballot. And that's why I don't want to be one of those people that's like, ah, it's too late.
Yeah.
I just want to be, because she made the effort to show up and vote. And to me, that's one of the most important things. No matter what you think about politics or the people who are serving you, if you don't show up, you know, we all lose. when somebody doesn't get involved, if you're not invested. That woman was invested. She told me about her family. She had six kids. She used to work at City Hall. She was a paralegal. I mean, I have a whole essay about her, and she was just a lovely woman who was not going to let her vote be thrown away.
And I heard on the show earlier you said that you like to vote on
election day. I like to vote on election day.
Are you guys the same way? Because that's how I am.
Yes.
Did you go with your parents? Did your parents take you when they voted?
My dad was a Republican precinct captain. I went door to door, voted on election day. He was, you know, it was a blast. And now Ken voted early, which we forgive you for that. You just want to get it out of the way.
Yeah, I've actually done it a couple of times recently, but hey, I got it.
Well, I mean, it is Chicago, so I guess that explains that.
No, I mean,
you do it a couple times.
Voting early is good. I'm just teasing.
I've got a serious question, and I don't know if we're coming up on a break, but
yes,
if we are, we can think about this one.
All right, ask the question we'll think about during the break.
The big event of the week that kind of set the tone for the week, certainly as far as Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle was concerned, was the little tete-a-tete that Mark Wick and Lightfoot got into, I think, was it on Tuesday or Monday?
Monday.
Eric and the rest of you guys, you think Mark Wick and Lightfoot set that up?
No.
Ooh, interesting. He said think about it during the break,
Eric. I'm sorry, we'll think about it.
Think about it during the break. Yeah, 312-981-7200. Perhaps you also aren't familiar with the story. You can, you can join us when we come back. More in a moment on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. It's finally Friday, and we're talking about all the stuff we held on to. And just, I didn't comment. I didn't say anything. Now we're talking. I wish this was an occasion where we could say it's only a few more days until election in Chicago and we won't have to worry about all these ads and, you know, all these conversations and debates. But, you know, there's no doubt that there will be a runoff because in the city of Chicago, you have to have 51% in order to win the election. So it will be the top two vote getters on Tuesday that will go on to the runoff in April. I believe April 2nd will be the date for that. We've been talking about the week that the candidates have had. Most noteworthy have been, I believe, the campaigns of Susana Mendoza, I think, has been trying to do her best to sort of get some traction when it comes to the heat that Tony Preckwinkle has faced and the fallout that Lightfoot has been able to also, I believe, benefit from in the light of certain situations throughout the week. And we were asked by Ken Jacobowski before the break whether or not Lori Lightfoot and Representative Martwick staged the encounter they had on Monday. Ken, first of all, let me ask you this before we go to our listener, Brian, who has a comment. Why would you even ask that?
Well, you know, Martwick has endorsed Tony Preckwinkle. He's been a nice supporter of hers. But that was not something that you would do for someone that you've endorsed. I mean, every article talked about Tony and her connection to Berrios. And it was not something that if I were Tony, I would have been pleased with at all. It's kind of like one of those, if this is your friend, holy smokes. So and Lori benefited so much from it and continues to benefit from it. From a fundraising perspective, it got her noticed. And in a race where there's 14 people, five or six within basically statistically tied for first, certainly for the first two, she got a huge, huge boost out of it. So it just seems too cute. I know Martwick's running around being very upset about it, and still, supposedly raw over the incident. And my question is, well, why? Why would you do that? It just makes no sense to me. The legislation made no sense, given that he supported exactly the opposite in Lake County. Going to her press conference makes absolutely no sense. There's so much that makes no sense about this, except it benefited Lori Lightfoot.
Eric?
I hear what you're saying, and I think that it was... It may have been a plan, where the Preckwinkle campaign may have said, hey, you should go over there and provide a rebuttal. But I think it became a little personal for Rob just because he's been so close to that issue. And I think they both had a lot of passion and there's high stakes right now. And I think they just kind of got into it. I mean, neither one of them were holding back. I mean, if you saw that video, it was pretty intense. And it really played, like I said earlier, I think it totally elevated Lightfoot and got her a lot of earned media.
And when you look at the video, I mean, they were head to head. They were there was a lot of emotion.
Well,
if he was acting, he's a better actor than Jussie Smollett. I mean, you know.
We'll get to that in a little bit. We have a listener who wanted to join the conversation as well. Brian, what are your thoughts on all of this?
Okay, so two things. The first thing is I would say that Martwick and Lori Lightfoot going at it really didn't shift anything in this race because, as he just said, Jussie Smollett. That is the one thing that's been dominating the news for the whole week.
Interesting.
And no one was focused on the race when that happened. Second thing I would like to say about the TPW debate or the forum is that, hands down, Paul Vallis killed it in that debate. So if you don't think anyone stood out, you weren't paying attention enough.
I would say Vallis did. No, he did. He had the best line of the night, which was...
It's not about lines. He had the best plans. He stood out and said, you know, here's what I'm going to do. Exactly what you were saying, you know.
Yeah, but I'm also familiar with Vallis's background, so a lot of folks can have plans, but you know whether they're going to pan out or not. I will say, as far as his showing at the debate, though, yes, he did even say, you know, I will talk the issues if you ask me about them, which was he seemed to be the only one who was willing to do that.
But the thing is that he will also then keep talking. We are live, and the gentleman is very nice. All the candidates I have enjoyed meeting and spending time with, interviewing them, moderating the forum at the Copernicus Center. They all honestly, I will say this, and this is a problem with you know, showing up and trying to learn more. Nobody really inspires me, but we shouldn't be looking for inspiration. We should be listening for policy and for plans, and that's what the listener Brian was saying, I think. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, there are a ton of there are a ton of really capable people. I think Paul Vallis is very capable. I don't agree with everything he, you know, stands for, but we actually have a lot of pretty good choices, but you're right. Nobody is kind of inspiring.
Right. Eric?
As it relates to the debates, these are all sound bites and, you know, rehearsed lines that their teams have. You know, a lot of the things are poll tested or gone through a focus group if they've got the funds to do it. So, you know, you're not getting any kind of real insight into where they want to go or how they're going to lead. So just, you know, keep that in mind. I mean, do a little bit more research on some of these candidates. And, you know, everything that you're hearing in the debates, they've been repeated over and over and over. So... they're, like I said, I think that they're mostly sound bites because you have so many candidates. If they've got, you know, a number of them on the panel, you only get a minute to maybe 10 minutes in total for the whole time.
And it's all broken up, too. It is, is a format of the debates. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We've been talking about the mayoral race. Perhaps we'll get a chance to talk about the governor's budget that he presented this week. We also have some national news, and apparently the Patriots owner was looking for a happy ending. More after this on 720 WGN. We have been talking about the city election for Chicago coming up on February 26th, but it's ongoing, really, because the early polling is open. You can go to your local area. Like in my neighborhood, we can go to the 16th District Police Station, which I find fascinating. During the election in the fall, one of the candidates was a police officer, and so that was weird to go to basically her office. I don't know how I'm supposed to react in this situation. Yes, Eric?
We're going to catch the bad guys trying to vote.
It was a little strange. So I was asking our good friend Jim Allen, who is the spokesperson for the Chicago Board of Elections, and he was saying that you can vote all weekend. Early voting is open this weekend, Saturday from 9 to 5, Sunday from 10 to 4, and again on Monday from 9 to 5. Now, the polls open on Election Day at 6 a.m. I will be there at 5 a.m., bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, or at least with a baseball cap and a ponytail. Same thing. But is that unprofessional? Is that okay if I show up with a baseball hat?
Just bring the donuts. You have to bring donuts.
I've been told donuts will be provided by the precinct captain.
Ah. Mm.
They always run out though. By the time I get there, the donuts are all gone.
I'll bring. How about donut holes? Those are easier.
Those are good.
Yeah. Okay.
Those are good.
Just a little less pressure.
Like patch keys or whatever they're.
Punch keys.
Right. I've been told not to bring a fruit plate because don't be that person is what I was told.
How about an edible arrangement?
Right.
No, I don't think so. Don't think so. So thank you so much to our good friend Jim Allen. He says that they've seen 24,000, a third of 74,000 early voters just yesterday and today. So people are making up their minds, and it might have to do with this week's events. I'm not sure. But again, early voting is open all weekend long and on Monday as well. They've seen returns of the vote by mail ballots also have surged from 29% to 38% today.
So, wait, say that again?
The returns of vote by mail ballots have surged from 29% to 38% just today.
Although I had seen, as of a few days ago, like 3 days ago or so, the number of early voters was essentially the same this year as it was at that exact same time in 2015, which was not at all a particularly contested race because Rahm was, you know, pretty much a lock to win. So actually, it seems kind of surprising that there has not
been. Until he had the runoff.
He had a runoff against Chuy García.
That's right. I guess it was. Yeah, so I guess what I just said is completely wrong. Well, let me ask you this, though.
Okay.
Do you think there is anything in the last three and a half days before the election that could really shake things out? Or are we too late?
Well, now, you guys, we all read the newspapers, and I'm speaking for the audience. I hope you're reading, but the newspapers seem to be coming out with a different hit piece every single day. Daly and his test for the insurance thing, Lightfoot and her prosecutorial history and like not following instructions or getting reprimanded in court.
And it was Chico today.
Right, Chico. And everyone has been getting these slam pieces. So I don't know. I mean, are they waiting until Monday for like the biggest one? Is it going to be? Who will it be on Monday? What do you think, Ken?
But listen to the litany of slam pieces. They went back to 1973. Again, I point out, Frank Robinson hit 20 home runs in 1973, and he died about a week and a half ago at 88.
Yeah, but Ken,
these are such small issues.
But Daly has said in debates and in interviews that his family has nothing to do with his success. And yet his ability to pass that did somehow, I believe, was influenced by who his family was.
I can't
hear your phone anymore. I'm kidding. Go ahead. I'm kidding. Go ahead, Ken. Yes.
I worked for Bill back in 1987, and I met him in 86. And I can tell you, the thing that struck me most when I met him in 86 was how much he had set his own path and had gone his own way. He was not at all tied to his brother. He was doing his own thing in Washington. That statement is absolutely correct. Politicians say things, and, you know, Tony Preckwinkle in her commercials, at least in her earlier commercial, gave you the impression she taught at Chicago Public Schools for 20 years. She didn't. She was there a year. The rest of the time was in private school. But the fact of the matter is that Bill's absolutely correct. He did it all himself, on his own, set his own course. Now, certainly the name Daly opens doors. That's clear. So, you know, you have to being totally honest, Bill would have to mention that. But
the minute that Bill Daly defends the parking meters, I think a lot of Chicagoans go, wait, he was a part of that? Because he was, Ken. And that's something where we sold the rights to our parking meters for 75 years, and the money was spent in two.
Well, now that's a whole different matter.
How is that what?
I could have bought a lot of soda.
The decision to spend the money.
But the problem was the contract and what was involved in that, whether it was, you know, days where people could or couldn't park, handicap parking. Don't get me started, because I will. But they have made it very difficult for Chicagoans to even be able to figure out, like, well, how much am I paying this time and how long is this going to last? Well, let me tell you, a lot longer.
Yeah, I remember paying, you know, 67 cents for a 2 liter of soda under Tony Preckwinkle's tax. But I also know I just dropped about $12 to park downstairs.
Sorry about
at the meters. No, it's okay.
We used to have a lot. Sorry about that.
And that's thanks to that deal. And how much do we have to pay to go over the Skyway
now?
Yeah,
the used to be that parking downtown after a certain time, you didn't have to pay the meters anymore after midnight.
Yeah. No, so to your original point about the stories that have been coming out, right? This is kind of interesting because, you know, it used to be that, you know, at this point, you know, by the Thursday, Friday, Saturday before the Tuesday election, you know, papers, the media wouldn't really run a hit because they didn't want to unduly influence a campaign. Also, it becomes really difficult to generate turn a mail piece around or do an ad. Now you can create an ad extremely quick, or you can move digital, do a digital ad, and that's not just on Facebook. And
right.
So, but a lot of these things, I'm surprised that some of the campaigns had not invested more in their own oppo to push. It seems as though that sometimes the Tribune and others have been, their investigative folks have been on the case. But I mean, they've also got everything that's been going on with the Smollett case, the R. Kelly,
right.
the Burke, you know, the Solis. That started to pull back an onion daily, or, you know, weekly, you know, on some of these aldermen. But.
Well, I will say it is, when you think about the way, let's look at the way J.B. Pritzker ran his campaign, right? As annoyed as people were as having J.B. pop up in their thread, you know, it was strategic and it was deliberate. And I have not really seen that from a lot of these. And I know they don't have the same kind of resources maybe JB did, but not even on a smaller scale have I seen the sort of like dedicated, you know, sort of like going after that sort of.
Yeah.
The digital spend in campaigns will be surpassing that on TV or radio. This cycle or next. Okay.
If you just look at the TV commercials, though, for a lot of these candidates, they only have one. I mean, Lori Lightfoot, for example, only has one.
Which was the weird part about this week is that she got a lot of free exposure.
She did. And then we can also talk about some of the folks who are a little further down in the polling and the production values of their commercials. And I'm not going to name names like, you know, Bob Fioretti, for example, or, you know.
Oh, man, I thought you weren't going to name names.
Or Willie Wilson. But
it's so sad. Can I say in my neighborhood, there's like a really sad sign for Bob Fioretti, like behind a chain link fence on the side of the highway in Jefferson Park. I was like, what?
But the production values on a couple of these candidates' commercials, it's like, watch Gary McCarthy's, and he's talking to like a room full of people, and he's mm-hmm. standing at a brick wall, and you can hear like clapping that they just like dubbed on. The people aren't clapping, but you hear it's like. I don't know.
Well, and I will say this. Friends of mine have told me they really like Bill Daly's ads. Someone else told me they love Susana Mendoza's. John Williams will tell you he's voting based on how much he likes an ad.
Yeah.
And he changes.
My kids love the ad where she talks about how her mom wouldn't let her play soccer.
I think that they shouldn't be allowed to vote. I think they should have to take a test or something before they vote.
Thank you.
Tom Hush, before we go to the break, because you were about to give me the break signal. what are the things that are important to you as a young millennial? Because none of us fall in your category.
Oh, you don't say.
I'm pretty sure we're all Gen Xers in this studio and on the phone. What is most important to you when it comes to this election?
Well, and when it comes to me, I even see myself as a bit of an outlier because I kind of operate like an old person. Like I still get the paper delivered every day. That's how I prefer to read my news.
You hipster.
I know. And I do try to focus less on what they're trying to tell me through any sort of, I don't know, focus group tested marketing and advertising, because I know that, you know, they have a committee of people that have a vested interest in getting them elected. What I prefer is forums, debates, any sort of interviews that are strictly asking questions and putting people you know, in the hot seat, as it were. And especially after the whole J.B. Pritzker ad thing, I think those were some of the worst advertisements I've ever seen in my entire life. It made me not want to vote for him because they were smug. They were poorly produced.
I thought some of them were adorbs.
They were so dumb, at least for the
Rauner and his like workshop, his like wood, like he's got a bandsaw behind him or something.
He's got a lot of flannel
shirts. When I was watching The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, I wasn't getting a Rauner ad every 10 minutes. It was a J.B. Pritzker ad. I was like, please stop assailing me with this.
No one should run a political ad during Handmaid's Tale.
No,
that's bad timing.
No, it's bad. Yeah,
go ahead. Sorry.
I prefer I know it's kind of like a simple thing to say, but the issues, like, I don't care what you're trying to tell me through any sort of marketing. I want you to just tell me straight, what do you care about, what do you vote for, and even if I disagree with it, I just want to know the truth. Because if we disagree on whether or not Chicago should have a casino that we can tax
you can't
them.
No. Handle the truth.
Yeah.
No casino. Next. And,
yeah, exactly. Right. At least just give me the straight dope. Just
I'm not running, but no casino.
And Carol Marine actually did a really nice job in some of the forums this last week on WTTW, where she just had kind of a lightning round, and she kind of really made them give yes or no answers, like, you know, yes or no casino, yes or no aldermanic.
And did they try
privilege.
To, because when I did that, they were like, well, it's more complicated. No, you say yes or no. Let me take a break, and we'll talk more about this, and maybe the state budget that Governor Pritzker presented earlier. I believe it was on... I was texting Dave Lundy during the speech because the sign language translator was a little distracting. As the mother of a child who cannot speak, I was trying to watch him, and I was like, do you really gonna stick your tongue out when he sounds frustrated? That was weird. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Oh, I got screenshots. It was strange. I haven't even really had a chance to introduce everyone that's on the show tonight. Sitting in the co-pilot seat tonight is Elliot Serrano. He's our chief geek officer. We have Eric Elk, who is the president and CEO of Fulcrum, Illinois, and also former chief of staff for Senator Mark Kirk. We have Mike Lieber of
Lieber Law Group.
Lieber Law Group, appropriately named for your law firm.
Yes.
I would say. We have Ken Jakubowski on the line with us. He is the president and CEO of Cirrus Enterprises, a crisis communications expert. I think a lot of communications were in crisis this week. We also are missing tonight Dave Lundy, who is listening to the show. He is the president of Aileron Communications, regular contributor to WGN Radio and CLTV, and texting us, telling us that he is not a part of any group, not a Gen Xer, not a millennial, not a baby boomer. There has to be a gap.
He was outcast.
Gap group somewhere. Ken, are you a Gen Xer?
I'm old.
See,
so what is it if you're old?
I'm at the low end of Gen X. I don't know what old is, but
what is Gen X? What
Gen X, right? Gen X is about now like 38 to like 52, 53.
So it's like
there.
Right.
No,
so
no,
it's
no,
right
I'm
after
a baby boomer.
No,
I'm a baby boomer.
So, but baby boomer seems older. There has to be a gap group.
Well, baby boomer is
like
1946 to 1964, I think.
Yes, that sounds right.
Yeah,
so
and then
go.
Gen X is 1965 to what?
To 1978.
Gen X was 65?
67,
really?
Yeah. Yeah, because my mom's a Gen Xer. She's 60. She's 1966, and my dad was a baby boomer in 1952.
My God, you are young.
Gen X, Gen X is a big. Gen X has a big swath. They have a big.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine Gen X in the 60s. Wow, how about that?
Yeah, there you go. Gen X, baby.
Wait a minute. Did someone just say they were born in, their father was born in 52? Who was that?
I think it was, that would be Tom Hush.
Tom, my God almighty.
No, I think he said that she was born in the 60s.
So my mom is 1966.
Yeah.
And my dad was born in 1952 because that was the year that Elizabeth II was coronated.
You could be my child.
Oh,
Tom, Dad?
Tom, you cannot be my Tom. You are not my child. I am not your mama.
No,
the results are back.
You're the cool aunt.
Yeah, absolutely. My niece, my oldest niece, is 7 years younger than me. So
wow.
Yeah, I was 7 years old when I. Yeah, I know.
Well,
I was
hello.
Like, yes, I couldn't even hold her properly. They were like, oh, watch out for her head. I didn't know the whole bobbly head thing. Anyway, okay, back to the focus of tonight's show, which is that we've been talking about the mayor's race. Elliot Serrano, our chief geek officer, is not a City of Chicago resident, has no voting obligations coming up on Tuesday. All of us in the city do. But I would say this city election has ramifications not just for the suburbs, but for the entire state of Illinois. What we decide to do here with our pensions, with education, with our taxes, affects everyone that not only visits our city, but also lives in the state of Illinois. Wouldn't you say, Eric? You work a lot in Springfield.
I think it totally does. Yeah, I mean, because it's, you know, whoever wins, you know, first day in office, they have a lot to deal with in terms of the pension crisis. I mean, it's, and they're going to have to work closely with the new governor of Illinois. Yeah, I mean, there is a we are in a crisis. You know, whether it's trying to fund capital. I mean, just last week we had the issue with Lakeshore Drive, the bridge. You know, I mean, there isn't enough funding. That's you know, they haven't planned well enough, and they've been borrowing from different accounts to, you know, Robin Peter to pay Paul.
You know, I was surprised there was a candidate in my studio, and I won't say who didn't even know at about 10:45 at night, the day of the Lakeshore Drive debacle, where part of the pavement buckled and we could see like the foundation was not secure, did not know about that. Which I guess if someone's like running around and speaking to all these groups, how does somebody on their campaign not go, hey, here's something important, tell people how you would address this? But that seems like bad planning.
And it seems like they would have a cell phone that is getting, you know, push notifications from, you know, all the local stations, from the Trib, the Sun-Times, and you would see that like 12 times.
You would think.
One thing that Governor Pritzker kind of said in his budget address was, you know, he laid the foundation for the need to change the constitution, the state constitution, to have a graduated income tax. But that won't happen for a couple of years. And it'll only happen if the voters approve it, if I'm not wrong. And I was thinking the other day, you know, what if it goes to a vote? And, you know, his entire trying to get Illinois fiscally sound, or at least in the realm of soundness, is predicated on a graduated income tax. And what if the voters vote no?
Right.
Then what do we do?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Is
declare
it
a state of emergency? I don't know. That seems to be the thing.
It's a trend. Yeah. That's how you get things done. No, I'm the governor's budget has been met with some, I would say, a lot of. Obviously, there are Republicans who were not happy with it. In particular, there were propositions to raise taxes on cigarettes, on gaming, on bags, on a lot of different things that you know, people might think, well, that's okay. If you buy plastic bags, that's on you. If you smoke, that's your problem. If you're gambling, it sucks to be you. But he also said that, you know, he's because marijuana is already readily available, we may as well make it legal. I'm not thrilled with that thinking. Like, I get that's a lot of people believe that. As long as you can get it anyway, why don't we make money off of it? There seems like there should be other steps before we get there.
But right now in this state, you're not, it's not readily available unless you have a medicinal license or card, mm-hmm. or you're on the black market buying it from, you know, Chapo Guzman's guys or something. El Chapo.
Wow. I mean,
it's a black market, basically. I mean, it's
right.
not...
Right, it's not, you know, so it's not safe.
It's not regulated.
And there were people who were dying in the last couple of years because
Absolutely.
They were getting marijuana that was made with synthetic materials.
Right. Well, so that... But let's think about this. If they... Have they taken into account if they do decriminalize or, you know, legalize or however they're going to do it, regulate it, what happens, you know, and everybody wants to grab that money, tax it, use that money.
Right.
What's going to happen with the tax that comes from liquor and spirits and things like that? Is that going to decrease? You know,
I can't imagine anything. Have we decreased taxes on anything ever?
Well, no. What I'm saying is it's a use tax.
Right. Oh,
so
I see what you're saying.
People stop consuming alcohol because they're consuming more cannabis or something. And is it really going to be like this manna from heaven? new money. It's, I don't know that it's new money. It's just going to, you know, something else is going to decrease and it's going to raise here. So
I don't know that we've seen, you know, for example, in Colorado where it's, you know, totally legal. I don't know that you've seen the rates of people, the percentage of people using marijuana go up much. So that tells me that people are just going to get it legally as opposed to illegally, and the people who were drinking before are going to keep drinking. So I don't know, but I have to say I'm not a big fan of legalization. I just the notion of making it more socially acceptable for people to, you know, kind of be inebriated as much as possible.
Altered.
I know, I'm a total square. Elliot is making the square symbol.
All right, I gotta take a quick break here, and then we've got to go to Tom also making the...
I know. I'm a fuddy-duddy.
Yeah, well, I don't necessarily think Illinois is ready to be high, but I keep saying that, and people keep looking at me. I'm not saying you can't. I'm just saying, are you?
Illinois is already high, Patty. You just got to tax it.
I just thought there were a lot of skunks in my neighborhood. More in a moment on 720 WGN. It smells. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Now, we have been talking about the mayoral race pretty much. Some of the candidates have come up. We've also talked about the aldermanic races earlier with John Arena, who is running for the 45th Ward. We haven't talked much about the city clerk or the treasurer's office. Apparently nobody cares about those jobs, which reminds me I should probably run for city clerk at some point. That seems like one way to get ahead in the city. Because, by the way, the other two people on the ballot have been disqualified. So no matter who you vote for, there's only one person that's going to win. So I'm going to do that next time. That seems like a way to go. Anyway.
Write yourself in.
I don't think that is a possibility. Ken Jacobowski, I want to tell you that we're going to play What's That From? So, Ken, if you don't mind, we're going to put you on hold, and I promise we will come back and discuss more. Is that all right?
Yeah, I'm sitting on the edge of my chair trying to figure out who is left in the treasurer's race. So you can show us in later.
You know what? I already picked my candidate, and it's not the one that told me we don't need an autism center at Coonley School on the Northwest Side. So you can go ahead and figure who that is. Anyway, more in a moment with Ken Jacobowski. We're going to play What's That From? So we're going to read a scene from a classic movie. This is actually one of my favorites. And but you won't know that from listening to the show. There's no way you would know. This is one of my favorite movies. My family loves this movie. I won't tell you the genre because we're not giving any hints. It's all based on the script that we read right here. We're going to take a classic movie and ruin it for you so that you can never watch it without thinking of us again. Tom Hush, who is a big fan of films, I think as you work with the show more often, you're going to really hate us more and more. So,
I can't imagine how that'd be possible.
So 312-981-7200. When you know what's that from, give us a call. We have a gift card for you from Apt Electronics, pleasing people since 1936. Go to abt.com and do some shopping there, or visit their store in Glenview and say hi to Steve Shapiro. All right, Roger, thank you so much for pulling the script, and take it away.
I don't start first on it.
All right.
Thank goodness. So whoever has that first line.
I have raised Ceres on Zeta Frequency.
Great. Thanks.
Still, Mathisar, your crew may nonetheless be helpful in...
Yeah, he is interrupted by the sight of Ceres appearing on the large view screen. Ceres now wears a metal eye patch and has a long scar across his cheek.
We meet again, Commander.
The crew stares at Ceres, a frightening visage.
Yes. Hi, Ceres. How are you doing?
Better than my lieutenant. He failed to activate the ship's neutron armor as quickly as I'd hoped on our last encounter.
He brings into view a stake with the impaled head of his former lieutenant.
Right. Well, listen. I'm sorry about that whole thing before. It was kind of a misunderstanding. I'm sure we can work this out like reasonable people. How's the, How's that going to heal up? God, I hope so. I feel just awful about that.
Deliver the device now, or I will destroy your ship.
Listen, I'd like to, but frankly, I'm not even sure where it is, or even...
You have 10 seconds.
All right. You got it. You win. I'll deliver it now. Just give me a moment to set it up.
Jason motions to Gwen to cut the transmission. Gwen nods.
All right. Now, nobody panic. I've dealt with this guy before, and believe me, he's as stupid. stupid as they as he is ugly.
Jason.
We're gonna fire everything we've got at him, all right?
Jason!
You just keep pushing those buttons. Those there, send everything at him.
Guy looks at the buttons labeled with icons of armaments.
Okay.
All right. Put me back on with them.
I'm trying to tell you, you are on with him.
Perhaps I'm not as stupid as I am ugly, Commander.
Jason turns to Gwen, horrified.
I made the cut-the-line gesture. You nodded okay.
I thought it was the "we're dead" gesture. I was agreeing. Like, I know where the hold button is.
Oh, Saris, you can't blame me for trying.
Of course not.
Guys, red thingy moving toward the green thingy. Red thingy moving toward the green thingy.
What?
Guy motions to the radar screen. The red blip is about to impact.
I think we're the green thingy.
A present for you, Commander.
Shoot! Turn! Gun it! All gas, no brakes! Get out!
The ship is pounded by a torpedo blast. The entire crew goes flying from their positions into the walls. The lights flicker. Then another blast sends them crumpled against walls and objects like rag dolls. The pain is palpable as they try to get back to their stations.
Oh, we gotta get out of here.
Tommy looks at the sparkling map of lights on his dash.
Where?
Just go! Go! Go, darn it, punch it!
Tommy punches the red button. They all hold on for dear life as the ship roars forward across the path of Saris' ship.
They're turning. They're coming!
An explosion rocks the ship. Then another. And another.
The ship is sustaining structural damage.
Guys, we're sustaining structural damage.
Faster, Tommy! Get us out of here!
It's as fast as it goes.
They're still behind us.
We should have a turbo. I'm always saying, activate turbo boosters, right?
Could this be it?
Push it! Hold it down! Go!
He pushes the turbo. The ship begins to vibrate.
The enemy is matching velocity.
The enemy is matching velocity.
We heard it the first time!
Shoot, I'm doing it! I'm repeating the damn computer!
Suddenly, an image of Fred down in the generator room appears on the side view screen. He's taking it all in stride.
Guys, listen. They're telling me that the generators won't take it, the ship's breaking apart, and all that. Just an FYI.
The view screen goes black. The ship roars forward.
We've got to stop!
We stop, and we die. Keep holding the thruster down, Tommy.
You don't hold a thruster down. It's for a quick boost.
I forgot.
The ship groans and creaks. Then a loud siren sounds.
I remember that sound. That's a bad sound.
Jason looks forward. In the distance is an amorphous mass.
Maybe we can lose them in the cloud.
I don't think it's a cloud.
As they approach, the cloud reveals itself to actually be thousands upon thousands of slowly rotating octahedrons.
Mathisa, what is that?
It's the Tothian minefield left standing from the Great War of 12185.
Woo!
Wow. I totally forgot one.
Wow.
That's okay. I've been there before, Roger. It happens. We get like so invested in our characters.
Well,
it's
no,
like,
I was trying to make sure I had everything.
But you did great, Roger. It's all on the fly. It's all on the fly. 312-981-7200 if you know what's that from. And I have we have a gift card from Apt Electronics. I also have a desktop weather indoor station to give away for some trivia. So I have a trivia question for folks too if you hold on the line. So Tom, you can take the 773 and the 312 as well as backups just to make sure. Hey Adam, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
What's that from?
Galaxy Quest.
Yay!
Nice.
We love this movie in our house. Let me ask you, what was the which line gave it away? Was it the names? Was it the dialogue?
As soon as you said Saris, that was it. It's a it's a favorite movie in my house. We kids and we all watch it. We've watched it. We got VHS, DVD, you name it.
It's a great movie. I have to agree. Oh, yeah. Now, did you know what this was, Mike? Had you seen this before?
I've seen it, but I haven't seen it in a long time. So he basically got it four words in, because Saris is the fourth word that we read.
All right. Well,
oh, yeah.
There you go. Well, congratulations, Adam. You've won a gift card to Apt Electronics, pleasing people since 1936. You can visit their store in Glenview and say hi to our good friend, Steve Shapiro, who has helped us out. And Billy, by the way, thank you so much for all your help on my Mac. And you can visit their online store at abt.com. So now I've got to find out. Well, here, I'll just put Adam on hold. Adam has won the Apt card, abt.com Apt. And then we have, is it Ark? Hey, Ark, how are you doing tonight?
Good, how are you today?
Doing very well. Now, did you know what movie we were doing before we even finished?
In a heartbeat. I'm a big Star Wars fan, so I love that movie.
So let me ask you this. There's so many different Galaxy Quest questions. Let me ask you this. What is the name of the spaceship? Do you happen to know the name of the spaceship?
Oh, you're putting me on a spot here.
No, that's okay. I'm not going to make it. That's all right. Hold on one second. Let me find some more stuff. There's so many questions on here, but I don't like all of these. Okay, here, let me ask you this. Fill in the blank from this line. By Grabthar's blank, you shall be avenged. Elliot's going to give you, he's your lifeline.
Yeah, it's a tool.
It's a tool.
Something you use to hit nails.
Oh, hammer.
Yes! Hammer. All right, we've got a gift for you, Ark. We've got a weather station from American Weather... Oh, hold on a second, let me get this up. We have a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weather Makers, Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC. Grab, there's a hammer. That's, you got to know the hammer. Anyway, Dave Lundy is very upset, by the way, with all of us.
That was, that's Alan Rickman trying to bring as much dignity to a role that a man,
he was great. And, so good.
And when you consider that they're basically playing analogs of the Star Trek cast, Tim Allen is kind of like a William Shatner. Alan Rickman's being Leonard Nimoy. They were doing all those bits. And many people will say that Galaxy Quest is one of the best Star Trek movies out there.
And I'm looking at the cast on looking at the cast on IMDb, and one of the people, I don't remember what he played in the movie, Justin Long, a young Justin
yes.
Long.
Yeah, he plays one of the nerd. Yeah, the nerd.
Who helped save them.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's great. I love him.
Now, Ken, I'm assuming you had never seen Galaxy Quest.
No, I actually thought it was Terms of Endearment.
Give my daughter the drugs.
You're kidding me.
No, I did for a while, and then I realized it wasn't. No, I had no clue what it was. I've never seen Galaxy. I know there's a television show called Galaxy Quest, right?
No, there was no show. Although there was talk about making a television show about it for a while, or even a sequel to the film, but that never happened. So isn't there? I don't think.
Yeah, Galaxy. I've seen it in the guide, when you thumb through the drive, and I just go right on past. I've done that since it came out.
But wait, but you know Star Trek, though. I mean, of all the things.
The original Star Trek.
Yeah, but this is like
it's like a spoof.
Yeah, it's like a spoof of the original Star Trek.
You would actually like this movie. I think it's
Is it really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Very funny.
But now my interest is peaked. Maybe I will watch it.
You must watch it. It's adorbs. It is a really, really sweet movie.
Does it feature somebody like Bones? Is Bones in
that? Well, no, none of the Trek cast are in it, but when you watch it, you can tell who they were mimicking.
Yes, Alan Rickman is clearly a Spock character.
You got Sigourney Weaver, who's in it. Tim Allen.
Yeah, but Tim Allen is I think, a William Shatner type. He's got a big ego.
Tony Shalhoub.
Oh, Tony Shalhoub, yes, who has this great scene in the movie, too.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, has a really good scene.
All right, we have to stop swooning over Galaxy Quest. For those of you who have never seen it, we obviously all enjoy it, except for Ken, who's never seen it, and he's never seen Star Wars.
Recommendation: so. I will watch it.
Excellent.
I'm gonna rent this one.
You will like it. By the way, so when we come back, we were gonna do what we meant to get to, but I think I have to do something a little bit differently tonight. Tell me something good. I have to tell you about a friend of the show when we come back in just a little bit. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Didn't have time for it. We didn't have time to talk about it. It did not make the show.
it had to go.
You know, I'm looking at the stack of stories that we didn't get to, and Ken, I kind of feel like I want to do these in honor of your birthday. There's a lot of really silly stories in the news, including the owner of the Patriots. You know, first he had his balls deflated in order to win games, and then he wanted it just for fun, I guess. I'm not sure. But he has been, he's been, Ken, are you still there?
Oh, yeah.
Patriots owner Robert Kraft is facing charges of soliciting a prostitute. The 77-year-old was one of 25 people involved in the solicitation of the Orchids of Asia Day Spa. That's what we're calling it now. And thank you to Mike Lieber for bringing in his deflated ball.
That's my Deflategate hat.
You should see a doctor about that. We also have a lot. Well, the R. Kelly story will continue to unfold. I think this is a tragic story, and so we won't make light of it. But there is a statue of a young, shirtless, studly Abraham Lincoln, which has set Twitter alight. By the way, Eric, do you want to know more about the? Have you seen the picture of the stud? He's hooking his jeans. He's got no shirt on.
If she were a president, she'd be Abraham Lincoln.
And now that movie I've seen.
Are you kidding me? You've seen Wayne's World, but you've never seen Star
Wars. I've seen Wayne's World several times, both sober and drunk, and I loved it both ways.
All right. So there is a statue of a shirtless Abraham Lincoln that is setting Twitter afire. Well, he did help pass the 13th Amendment. Yum, yum. But it's all. Some people are wondering if it was supposed to be Luke Perry. So that is yes.
I'd hit that
with a penny. Just throw him. I don't know. That is.
Oh my.
He's got a book in one hand. He's very studious and studly.
It's wrong.
Why is it wrong?
It's just wrong.
I don't even know why.
That mean 150 years from now we're going to see one of those with Trump?
Oh,
just ruined my evening.
No, that's it. We have to go.
Shirtless Trump.
Oh, boy. So I want to say happy birthday to you, Eric. I hope that you had a good birthday. I saw that you got a present from your wife that we're going to play. I'm sorry, Ken. We're going to play a game in the next few weeks that your wife bought for you. Is that right? Trumps?
Yeah. Yeah, it's called No Trumps. This actually is really good. This will be fun. We can give away a lot of stuff with this.
Is it a game of solitary? I mean solitaire.
Well, you're dying to get me to say something about Bob Kraft, aren't you? And I've wanted to say something, but I'm just not going there.
Why not?
I have a feeling the manager would never want me back on the show, so I'm just not going to go down that road.
Well, here's the thing. Whenever there's a Super Bowl, they try very hard to not lock down on the sex rings. This is a problem that's happened in every city a Super Bowl comes to. Indianapolis had this problem. Anywhere they go.
Trafficking, human trafficking.
People out there will remember that several years ago when the Atlanta Falcons were in the Super Bowl, their star defensive back was arrested the night before the game for solicitation prostitution. I think the game was in Miami.
Well, on this, by the way, in the document that in the article that Tom has given me, there's also a list of a lot of other people who have had allegations of sexual misconduct and a lot of other things, legal problems when it comes to various situations that they found themselves in. So, I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll be totally fine. Classy guy. My friend Kasaki Akinopoulos, I can never pronounce his last name. He has the biggest name in comedy. And he says, I kind of feel better tonight knowing the owner of the Patriots has to pay for sex, too.
Yeah, like $69. I mean, come on, dude. You know, you can afford more.
There you go.
You know.
Before we end the show tonight, I do want to talk about, and Ken, I apologize, I have to talk about a guest we had on our show, a friend of the show, comedian Brody Stevens, who joined us just last month. He was in studio, had been on my show several times, and Brody Stevens has died at the age of 48. The comedy community is in mourning, and a lot of fans are coming to terms with this. Brody was a very prolific comedian. He worked hard in Hollywood. When he was in the studio, we talked about positivity and also imagining, you know, your reality and manifesting things. And you know, I got the sense that Brody was working very hard at his own well-being, and it was a pleasure to have him in studio because he was so excited to be at WGN Radio. He was a big fan of the station. He was so excited to see the new studios. We took a tour. We were hanging out with Bleacher Jeff, and it's a night that I'll remember for the rest of my life. We shared a lot of great stories on the air and off the air. It's one of those nights, Tom, I've talked about this, where I kind of wish we could record the off-the-air conversations. And I have... in my career, I have lost a lot of friends, a lot of them who have not been able to perhaps find that middle ground. When you're a stand-up comic and you're on stage and you have the energy of an audience that loves you, it is a pleasure and a joy that is indescribable. We really love the way people respond to what we share with you. The things that we think are funny, and then when you connect with them, is something that we can't even explain to you, the delight that we have. It's not just our joy that we are experiencing, it's yours. The thing is that when we have lows, it's also something that we can't let go of sometimes. And a lot of comics have a really hard time finding that middle ground. In my life, I have lost people like John Panette, Greg Giraldo, Patrice O'Neill, Tim Wilson. The list is longer than I wish it to be. Mitch Hedberg, who was a very good friend of mine. These are comics who spent their lives just trying to make you laugh. And it's, in some ways, we're never able to find that peace and that middle ground. And I hope that they have all found peace. And tonight we mourn the loss of a good friend of the WGN radio station, Brody Stevens, and also a friend of the Cubs organization and comics and fans around the world. More in a moment on 720 WGN.